Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and today I'm really excited for our conversation, and very shortly I'll introduce our guest. But before I do, some of you may be aware that the 6th annual World's Biggest Gratitude Lesson is coming up on 11th September 2025. Now, really excited this year, we're going to be joined by the Embrace Collective. Now, we're going to be joined by the founder, Taryn Brumford, who was also the 2023 Australian of the Year. Now, it's really exciting to have the Embrace Collective a part of this year's event, and we're really excited to have Taryn as our co-host, as well as a couple of students from South Australian schools who will join us as being co-hosts as well. Now, the purpose of the event is to bring young people together from around the world to practice gratitude, and it started back in COVID. And now it's been a tradition event. As I mentioned before, this is the 6th year. Now, as of recording this, it is the 7th of August and the event is on the 11th of September. So just over about five weeks away. And we've got around 30,000 students registered from about 15 or so different countries at the moment. We're expecting that to be up around 40 countries in the next few weeks. And we're aiming, pushing for 100,000 to join us. So it's a great event. It's really cool. The students love seeing each other on the screen from different parts of the world. Highly recommend. It only goes for 30 minutes. It's a great great event to be a part of. So we'll put the link in the show notes to join the World's Biggest Gratitude event. Now, today, I am super excited to be joined by Alicia Cohen. Now, Alicia is the author of Mainstream Primary Schooling, Your Special Needs Child. Now, the reason why I wanted to get Alicia on is because when I was teaching, I struggled to sometimes teach young people with special needs. Now, looking back on it, I was never really taught. There was different ways we, could learn more about how to include a special needs student, like by talking to their parents, speaking to their classroom teacher, because I was a specialist teacher. But we're at university and we don't really get taught how to do it. So this book is fantastic for not only for teachers, but for parents as well. So I really wanted to get Alicia on to talk about it, and we'll dive into that, a lot of the great content that Alicia provides today and some ideas. We've also put the link to the book in the show notes. Highly recommend it. I've got my copy here and I can't wait to read it myself. And also, it's interesting because Alicia is the founder of Amber Press. So she's written her first book, but she has helped a lot of educational authors publish books over a number of years. So it's so good that she got a chance to write her book herself. And it's a fantastic book. She's spoken to a lot of parents with special needs, fantastic content, fantastic ideas, and actionable ideas as well. And quite easy to read, and really excited for you to get a copy of the book. So without further ado, we'll get into the episode. Alicia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Now, I'm really excited to dive in to what we're going to talk about today. But first of all, I'm really keen to know, I guess, a bit about your background. I know that you started Amber Press, so keen to know how that came about, and also what led you to writing this book.
Oh, wow. That's a great great start. And there's quite a bit of a story there as well. I started publishing when I was around 20, and I started at a small educational publisher just down the road, and I fell in love with it. I just thought, what a great place, educational information, learning styles, all this kind of stuff. And I've gone on to have a, 20, 25-year career as an educational publisher. I ended up at quite a large publisher. I've worked for quite a lot of US publishers and UK publishers and their Australian offices here and stuff like that as well. But after having my first child, Remy, which we'll talk about a little bit more as well, I kind of started to think, well, this is a time to start reimagining things a little bit differently. I don't want to travel as much as I used to travel, etc. And then Remy was diagnosed autistic. And he had severe communication issues, and he was also diagnosed with an intellectual disability. And you know, my life didn't change overnight, but from that moment we met the pediatrician, I was pretty surprised. And you know, we went into early intervention for him quite quickly, etc., and it took a lot of time. And I was MD at a publishing house at this stage, and I was like, wow, we were doing speech twice a week, OT, etc. We moved into like a specialist early learning center as well, which had really odd hours, etc. And you know, life was just a little bit hard and different, etc. Then my life changed because you know, there was a lot going on. And at that stage, I actually took stock and thought, wow, this is probably the time to think about what's going on in my life. And I realized I'm going to have a lot of years in education. I've got, you know, I had a child and then I was pregnant with a second child as well. And I thought maybe this is the time to, you know, rebrand myself and do my own thing. So I did. And I opened up an educational publishing house, and I had, you know, one author who I knew from previously and he published with me. And then it just kind of happened from there. I love to read, so it's an absolute joy. And you know, I publish people that, you know, I publish Australian authors, Australian educators that I just think are amazing, and that are doing amazing work in schools and stuff like that. And it gives me so much joy to, you know, pass on a book that I've published into my children's school.
That must be a great feeling. And taking something that you've already all done all of your life and then creating your own, I guess, in a way, because due to circumstances, but I guess using that, your expertise and creating your own thing, I love that. And it's not always easy to do, but you just figure it out as you go, don't you? Because I guess totally different things that we do, but going from a teacher myself to doing Growing with Gratitude and trying to work out from a business side as well, it's a totally different thing. And it's just one step at a time. But it's amazing what you've done. I really admire that, and yeah, you do deserve all the credit for doing that. And also, I guess with your book, writing it from a parent's point of view to help teachers and schools. So, I guess we want to dive into the book really shortly because I love this, love the concept of this book. Because as we were talking about before we hit record, being a teacher, we never really get taught how to teach young people with special needs in the mainstream school, in a mainstream school. And as you said, there's so many different, I guess, I'm not sure what the right terminology is, but needs of different students, that there's so many different. You mentioned that Remy's got autism, there's students with other special needs, and there's so much variety. So with, I guess, for I want to start off with parents with special needs students. What advice would you give to parents whose child is about to start school, and you want them to, and they want them to go to a mainstream school? What sort of, and they have special, their kids have special needs. What advice would you give to them?
I do give this advice in the book, and I give it fairly early on. But to some extent, I talk about not becoming a difficult parent, but becoming a parent who's really interested and engaged. And you know, I talked to, you know, I went and looked around at the schools in our local area and was like, you know, which one's going to be the best for us and our family and stuff like that as well. So I think taking an active interest is, you know, one of my number one tips for when you're going into the school environment. And you know, not being the difficult parent, but I do talk about being the difficult parent, but being questioning, understanding, wanting to learn more, wanting to, you know, make sure the SSGs that you're about to go into, you know, but also that you understand the terminology that the school is using, because you know, knowledge is power, knowledge is understanding, knowledge is the ability to advocate and talk about your child and to, you know, to say, people, oh, would this work? Or can we try this? Or, you know, how are we going to manage this situation? Because I could foresee this being, you know, a bit of a tough day as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, is there a time when parents need to be difficult? As you just, when would
There
you?
is, there is, there is a time, you
Yeah.
know, and especially for, you know, some of our children with special needs have significant disabilities as well. And, you know, you do actually have to fight for funding. You know, we parents with special needs, you know, there is an NDIS pot, and that's really for the therapies and stuff like that. But then, you know, there is some, you know, funding available for students in schools. That money goes straight to the school. But that is a time to say, you know, this is what's going on. This is what's happening in our household. This is what you're likely to see at school. And we need support. We need that funding. You know, this child, my child, needs this money to get some additional support, whether that's in the form of an aide who's going to actually support him and do hand over hand, you know, handwriting, or whether it's you know, some technology that's going to support him, whether it's, you know, you know, a chair that's going to sit better for him and stuff like that. So there is a lot of things that schools can do in regards to adjustments and modifications to make the experience wonderful. You know, I have a child, and this is why I wrote the book. I have a child that skips into school every day. This is a
That's cool.
child who does not speak in sentences. He does have, you know, verbal, but, you know, really does not speak much. He has a device in his bag that helps him talk when he wants to use it. You know, and this is a child who just thinks this is the best thing ever, that primary school is his place, his world, and just runs in every day and thinks, I'm here to learn. What a joy.
That's a great story. And just with that funding for the school, so would you suggest the parents be proactive and approach the school about, okay, I think this would help my son or daughter. Can we apply for funding? Is it the parent that applies for it or the school that
No,
has to
the school
apply?
applies for funding, and
Yep.
normally they will tell you if you've got, you know, you can get funding or not. They will have a very good sense of it. If you're already funded through the NDIS, there's a chance that there'll be some school funding as well. The school knows pretty well. You know, we got funding within, you know, term one of foundation year as well, which was absolutely fantastic. And then you know, once things we knew a little bit more as well, that was like going into term one, we had no idea how it was going to go. And, you know, a couple of years later, we actually need more funding. You know, he needs a little bit more support and stuff like that as well. You know, no behavioural issues for us, but there is some other stuff that, you know, needs a bit of support and funding. So, you know, we did get refunded as well. It's a huge difference for the school. And, you know, but it is a, you know, you do sit there in a 3 hour meeting with the department, with the school, with yourself, with maybe somebody else who's an independent advisor, and you speak about deficits. You know, we're a society, and you know, we talk about neurodiverse and special needs children in a deficit model. And that's really talking, you know, I will spend, you know, 2, 3 hours talking about the worst of what goes on in our household and stuff like that. So they get a real accurate picture of not the, you know, I don't want to talk about my child in the worst sense because, you know, he's got heaps of strengths. But that is also the medical model, the health model that we're in as well. And, you know, I understand how it works because they need to know so that then they can support it and fund it properly. And, you know, they are great. They do what seem to understand, and we have been funded well. And it does mean, like, you know, there's no questions. You know, I know my child will be supported at Athletics Day, and I know this year we can make it on camp and stuff like that as well, because we've got the support from the school. The school is properly funded, and how fantastic. We can instead really focus when we're in our SSGs and talking about our student support groups, and when we're talking about his individual learning plan on his strengths. How can we, you know, develop his strengths, make him stronger, head towards independence.
It's really cool. And I'm such a big advocate for students with special needs being in the mainstream schooling as well, and like yourself. And it's such a great thing when you see. I love seeing students when they also supported by other students as well. Like you've got that, I guess, the school support, but when other students get around them as well and support them, like you see great examples of that. Have you seen that with Remy as well?
Yeah, he could be mischievous because that's exactly what we've seen. And look, it has taken time. So I don't want you to think like we got into prep, we got the funding, and life has just been swell. You know, it has been hard, friendships hard, and stuff like that as well. But you know, we've done a lot in that kind of space as well. And I'd even talk about this a little bit in my book as well, because you know, how can we support our young people to become friends, to make friends, to develop friendships, and stuff like that? You know, we have quite a diverse set of friends as well, some neurotypical, some neurodiverse in the school as well. And every year, the friendships have gotten stronger as well. And a part of my book is I actually went out and talked to a lot of other parents. I do know a lot of parents because of, the situation, but I really went out and sought out other parent stories. And throughout there's parent stories, throughout the book there's parent stories. I got a story from like an OT, from a principal. But I also got some stories from some actual students and young people. But a lot of them talked about friendship and the importance of friendship as well. So, and I, it's amazing, my Remy's in grade three now, and the friendships are genuinely forming, and they're genuine friendships with all different types and stuff like that as well. So, my research also said if we can keep turning up, if we can keep, I'm known as the snack mum, so I turn up with snacks at all the events because of course everyone wants to be my kid's friend when mummy brings all the great snacks. But play to your strengths.
Absolutely.
Play to your strengths, and that's one of my strengths. And so, isn't that wonderful that that's also how we can encourage friendships and stuff like that as well, because it is important, and school's a very social experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And I just want to shift in a minute, Alicia, to talking about how teachers can support their students with special needs in the classroom a little bit more. But before I ask you about that, I'm keen to know about building support team, because you mentioned about building or the importance of building a support team. So what does that look like, and how can parents start to build one?
I think there's like a lot of people that, especially in our lives, there's a lot of people. So, we've got OTs, we've got speechies, there's pediatrician floating around in the background. And then I look inside the school, there's the principal who plays a role, the vice principal in our school that does a lot of the well-being and this kind of space as well. Then there's the teachers, there's specialist teachers, etc. And then there's the our friends and our community and stuff like that. And so I guess there's a couple of things. I really ensure that the OT and the speech are a part of our team, that we're known as Team Remy, which is my son's name. And the emails go out to Team Remy. I'm very open about kind of the good, the bad. I write a start of the term email to pretty much everyone that kind of works with him so that they know what's going on during holidays. It's all about communication. The more I communicate and the more I bring people together and stuff like that as well, there's a lot in regards to, I think a lot of magic happens for our students and our young people in the SSGs, the student support meetings. And I'm a massive advocate for schools making sure that they get everyone either on the phone or in person. And I pretty much say to them, you tell me what time and I will be there. I will move appointments and stuff. If you can get the speechie there, the OT there, the school there, the teacher there, maybe even an integration aide. Yes, it's six people in the room and it's a busy and there's lots going on. But the more people who have a shared language, a common language, and are talking about the same things. And I guess I also feel the more I share about myself, my values, what I would like for my child, what I see for my child, as I've spoken, Remy can't speak in sentences, so he can't really advocate for himself. So I guess we do as much as we can to advocate and bring his voice into the meeting as well.
Absolutely. And by this, what I'm hearing there is that you've taken ownership of that to bring everyone together. So I guess some advice for parents, they really need to be proactive, because so I guess the school, I mean, so many things happen in school. Schools want to be helpful, but sometimes for a start, they don't know exactly how they can help. But if the parent is, I guess, advocating for their child, and in a nice way, of course, and helping bring people together, that's, I guess, that's the approach, taking the ownership.
100%. And I think the more you can advocate, the more you're seen as well. I do talk a little bit about being present and visible as well. And I guess I have chosen over the last couple of years really to, I drop the kids at school, I pick them up, I'm very present. And I go and talk to the teachers and stuff like that as well. So I think that also plays into kind of being an advocate as well, that you're seen, that you're wanting to be there, you're volunteering in other aspects as well, you're helping out and that kind of thing. I think all of that plays into this thing of, here we are as a part of this community, this school, we're giving. Because, it is also a process of, I feel you can't have a additional needs child and not feel that, they are getting additional support and additional time and stuff like that as well. So as much as, we try and give back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. It's a great outlook that you've got. And I think I'm curious to know actually, how would a typical day for Remy look in the classroom? So is he in the mainstream, like in the classroom 100% of the day, or does he go off with a one-on-one, have some one-on-one time with a SSO or
Oh,
support
yeah.
person? How's that
Look,
work?
it's changed also over the years. So foundation and grade one, etc., he did have a lot of support. One-on-one aid most of the day. He couldn't really sit down for 20 minutes or even like 7 minutes to start with. So, they would probably sit down maybe for 3, 4 minutes, then a 20-minute brain break outside. Over the years, we have kind of said, more sitting down, more in class, etc. Pretty much these days, he sits there the whole day. He'll go out Monday morning for speech, Tuesday morning for OT. And so he has maybe an extra brain break here and there. He has somebody at like lunchtime that supports him coming back in and going to the bathroom before he goes back up to class as well. Because toileting is also sometimes difficult for our additional needs young people as well. But we're also talking with the school about lessening his support as well. So he does have somebody on with him a lot of the time, but there's another young person in his class who also needs some support as well. So that aid kind of supports the whole class as well. It's not 100% for Remy. And so yeah, even these days we have talked about having less support in the afternoons. I'm really wanting to see more independence for Remy, that he doesn't need somebody one-on-one. He can just be one of the kids, because that's actually the aim. I want him to be one of the people. He needs help reading in the morning. And I guess I'm quite like, he can read, he needs practice every day. So, we do also, that's also some of our goals that I share really openly with the teacher and say, the learning gap is significant between Remy and his classmates. But one of our goals is, that he reads. Between you and I, and you've been a teacher, he won't handwrite. And I have had to die a little bit and give away the dream of him ever handwriting. He just, we've worked years with the OT. He has no interest in handwriting. However, we've got the AAC device, and like you can ask him to spell a word, and he might be even a better speller than me.
Yeah, that's
But
interesting.
and this and it, so it's fascinating. Fast and so over time with the school, we've learnt to play to his strengths.
Oh, so that yeah, that's really interesting. I guess there's just so many different ways that students learn, don't they? Like young people learn whether no matter their situation, they're learning, but just in different ways. Like, I don't blame him for not writing. Not a massive writer. I actually, to be honest, I don't mind journaling, so that's where I get my writing. But
And you've got to find the right thing. I think like Remy just looks at them and like, why are you making me write cat for the 20th time? Like,
no point. No, it's really, yeah, that's really interesting. I'm interested to know as well, Alicia, is there a time if a student with special needs is in a mainstream school, is there ever a time when they may need to look to go to a special school? Because I've been have a privilege of doing a few sessions at Riverland Special School, which is based in Berry in South Australia, and also Mildura Special School, and they're fantastic. I love those schools. And is there a time where they might need a student to go to a special school?
100%. And I do chat about this. There's like, if ma mainstream doesn't work for some people, 100%. And if Remy was a little bit different, and the disability might have been a little bit different, it might not have worked for him. And and like specialist schools have such an amazing place. There's the in Melbourne and Victoria, there's like the Southern Autistic School. There's some actual specific autistic school. I've got some friends with kids there who are just like, it's the most amazing place in the world. And I have coffee with them. And this friend, she looks at me and says, I do not know why you're mainstreaming. I do not know why you're having all this heartbreak, and not heartbreak, but here you are doing all this work. She says, I literally drop off and they come back via the bus, and the bus is the most amazing thing. She says, no, like. And so, she sees my life and thinks, oh my God, and she's like, specialist school, it's like easy, it's fantastic, it's incredible. And so I think, and it depends on the child. Remy's very happy, but I'm also not adverse to say, well, if this changes, if there's behavioural issues, if he just starts not coping, well, we'll try and fix the problem, but it might happen that he can't work. But I think, specialist schools are absolutely incredible and they do amazing work and stuff like that as well. Otherwise, there's also homeschooling. I met this woman in this process of writing this book. I reached out to this woman who's homeschooling her young person and chose to not do mainstream. And I was like, tell me. And she told me, and I was like, I'd never thought I could even do it. And she told me how she did. And I was like, wow, that is actually manageable. And you could do that if that's what we needed to do at some point in our life. So I'm also not closed off to any of these options as well. And I think, I have chatted to a few people. I don't know what our high school journey will be. And I think, I will have to consider all the options like I did in this place as well. Consider where Remy's at and, what I want also, what we foresee for his future as well and what he wants as well. It is quite hard with Remy. He can't tell us much. So,
Interesting. Yeah, and that's, I guess, one of the things to consider, isn't it? Like transitioning from that primary school age to the high school, what happens next? Because
I'll
that's,
write another book, no.
exactly. It's a great idea. It's such a, it's a, such a different thing, high school. Like it's the way it's structured, the whole way it works, it's totally different. So they'll be interesting. Yeah, interesting. It's just a question on, so what is Remy year 9? So he's in year 3.
He should be in year four, but we did an extra year of kinder, and it's been great. Good choice.
Excellent. So Michael, actually, that was my next question. With the academic or the learning, what is he at the year 3 or a learning level? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're asking. He's nowhere near. And I talk about this thing about the learning gap, and you must understand a little bit of the learning gap as well. And a lot can affect the learning gap, not just for young people with additional needs, young people with trauma or young people that have quite serious medical conditions. Learning is about scaffolding as well. You've got to get that foundation right to learn and stuff like that. I talk a little bit about like the school reports. I need like 3 days before I can read a school report. Just to kind of process, I need, yeah, just to kind of process it before I even like acknowledge that it happened and everything else. Remy has only just probably this year, late last year, actually gone on to the foundation levels. And so that is what it is. And every kind of year the learning gap gets a little bit greater because he might have missed a couple of things and stuff like that as well, or he didn't comprehend something in class and the class keeps going and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like I said, we kind of gave up about handwriting, 2 years ago. It wasn't just gonna happen and stuff like that. It does mean some things though. Like there's some things he just can't do because he can't handwrite and stuff like that. So then every time that gap grows a little bit longer and a little bit bigger as well. The learning gap is actually the thing that keeps me up at night, Ash. It's the one thing that I just think, oh my God, it just increases year on year and year. Not that that's an issue, but it is, I'm more cognizant of it. Every year, and I've got another like 4.5 year old going on to five, and I see that kind of stuff as well. But we all learn at different stages. And I think this is an incredible one. Like Remy was never interested as a young boy in the scooter. We bought him like one of those amazing scooters and everything. Just never interested. And we had no tea tried. We've had no tea tried. Bike riding, everything else. Never interested. Went on a play date a couple of weeks ago with some mates. There was three from school and Remy. We all took scooters. They scooted the whole time. Cannot get this kid off a scooter now. He's now got his leg over the front. He's got like a backwards trick. He's obsessed. The school holidays every single day at the skate park. And so I think, oh my God, yes, he just came to it a little bit later. All the other kids were kind of more scootering, 5-year-old, 6-year-old. Yes, he's more like 9-year-old, 10-year-old. We had to get a bigger one with three wheels. But like, oh my God, he's a demon.
That's a great story, that, and I love that. And can I just ask, with the assessment from the teacher has to do with Remy, is it, do they, is it, I don't know if it's the right terminology, but is it, I guess, their responsibility or even legality that they assess Remy as a year three student compared comparison to everyone else?
And look, they do, but we kind of look at a little bit differently, and the reporting's a little bit differently, and stuff like that as well. And I don't read into it too much. You know, as you can see, I can clearly see where he is on a kind of on a scale.
Yeah, got you. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I wasn't
But
quite
you
sure how
know,
that worked.
So it's very clear on a scale where he is. And, you know, a lot of most of the things, you know, we're looking at, you know, he's still in foundation kind of skill level as well. Some of the stuff, no, you know, he can actually read really well. Not at grade three level. He's probably more of a grade one level, but hey, I'm going to celebrate that. My God, that's a skill. So yeah, it is hard. The school does spend a bit of time with me about that as well, you know, and I do. You know, we do what we can do, and he will learn what he learns at the pace that he learns. And you know, instead, I base my days and everything on, did he have a happy day?
So good.
Are we
That's the
have
at the end
have
of the
if he's happy, did
In
we
a
have
way,
smiles?
that's how it should be for a lot of, like, well, all of us all, really, isn't it? Like, if we have a good day and we're happy, well, that's the main thing. Because, like, you think about it, like, schooling is obviously very important, but it's just life experiences as well, and like having fun and being happy, and they're the main things. Like, really, if we actually stop and think about it, obviously you need those other thing, the other skills, but at the end of the day, it's probably, we want to feel like we belong, we want to feel happy, we want to feel included as a person. So it's the
I couldn't
main
agree more.
thing. So, Alicia, your book, obviously, your book's called Mainstream Primary School. Sorry, I'll start again. Mainstream Primary Schooling, Your Special Needs Child. So, from a teacher perspective, so I remember just reflecting back when I was a teacher, and I kind of mentioned this before, that you don't really get taught how to include, or not necessarily include, but teach young people with special needs. So I was a PE teacher. So that could have been, depending on their needs, that sometimes was challenging. And the way that I used to think about it was, okay, I know that a child is coming with special needs, and quite sometimes they would come with like a support person, but sometimes they weren't. So I kept in mind that I had to have, or wanted to have, another activity just set up on the side, or some play equipment there that they could use if they wanted to go off and have a go by themselves. At least there was some things to play with, and they could be involved. From what advice can you give teachers about teaching young people with special needs? That's a pretty broad question, but maybe you could take it anywhere you want.
Oh, yeah, no, I do. And I guess, you know, some of it is about learning a student and getting to know them and stuff
Yes,
like that as well. You
definitely.
know, I have been, I mean, I don't want to say lucky, but I feel like we've been very supportive with teachers over the years. But I've also made it my purpose to tell them as much as I possibly can about Remy and about our family and about our values and give them a good sense of us as well and stuff like that as well and what he can and can't do. You know, any classroom teacher is differentiating. Any classroom teacher these days, to
Yeah,
some
so
extent,
true.
has a huge range of young people in their classroom. So, you know, yes, Remy's at the lower end, but in Remy's classroom, he has some, like, you know, quite, I don't want to say gifted because it's, you know, a technical
Yeah,
term,
I know
but
what you mean.
really quite amazing young, like amazing young people. So Remy's classroom teacher is normally is, you know, from prep where Remy's, you know, prep grade one kind of, and you know, she's still prepping work for grade, you know, young ones who are at grade five, six level in some things as well. So I guess that's the thing is, you know, think about things where you can find things on both ends and find students who can do this bit and this bit. You know, a lot of our teachers have also had a great time tag teaming him. So, you know, he reads to another young person and stuff like that. So then they get practice of, you know, supporting and stuff like that. But I guess it's really getting a sense of the young person as well. You know, when we get a new classroom teacher, I introduce myself, introduce the young person, I ask for a bit of a one-on-one time with them as well, so they can get that connection. And then I also, you know, before I am that slightly crazy parent, but before we go in for term one, I do a one pager which has a little bit about his holidays, has a little bit about his interests. Remy learned to read because of Bluey. Really interested in the Bluey TV show, and you know how it's got the word at the front that kind of comes up, like, this episode's about grandpa or trains and that kind of stuff. And that's how we first kind of worked out words and reading and stuff like that. So the amazing teacher, of course, wrote everything in Bluey. Every activity. So, you would be doing, the rest of the class would be doing, 3 plus 5, and Remy's counting 3 Blueys plus 5 Blueys,
That's so
equaling
good.
8. So, it's yet again picking up that interest area, their strengths. Remy was into Bluey, into Thomas, still is a little bit at 9, which is fine. But, we play to those strengths.
Absolutely. I think I think teachers can do it quite well where, say, the teacher from this year and they transitioned obviously to next year, having that conversation with each other as well, what worked for them as the teacher, say, for example, teaching Remy, what does he like, what he doesn't like. So that transition
Hand
between
over, so
handover, that's the
important.
word I was looking for.
No, you're spot on. And it is, and it's important to make that happen and be really aware. I think schools are getting better at transitions, though, and I think, transitions generally for all the student mass is getting much better. They're spending a little bit more time, and I think it's great because I think, some of this and more young people with additional needs coming, being in mainstream and mainstream really working around. Whatever they put in for, like, to some extent for Remy or what kind of supports actually supports a lot of people. So before a school excursion now, they do a social story. So we get it sent home like 2 weeks in advance saying we're going to the local gardens and this is what we're doing and they've got performers doing this and this. So then we can read it like every day for the 2 weeks up to it. But then the day before they read it to the whole class. And then we're about to go the next day on the excursion. She ticks off the names, then reads the social story again to the whole class. And then everyone, including the sporties, all on the same page about the expectations, what we're doing. So actually, the support that they're doing for Remy is actually benefiting every student as well.
Yeah, that's so good. That's great to hear. I guess on that, with schools, obviously schools do things really well. What's some things that maybe you wish that schools could do a bit better when they're supporting students with special needs? What's some of those improvements that could be made?
Schools struggle to do the tricky conversations. And behaviour management is really hard. And you
Yes, I
would
can
know
vouch
that
for that.
yourself. So,
I struggled with that.
a lot of the time you do have to have tricky conversations. And everyone needs to put on their, big people's pants and have those conversations about it. And then when bad behaviour, it is really hard. It's really hard to manage for everyone, and it really makes everyone dig deep to have those tough conversations about how can we change, what's going on, what other things are we seeing, do we have to think alternatives, what's not working, and also, we got to dive into things and really look at what's going on and what the problem is, and what has what do the hard work? Where has this problem started from, and what can we do to fix this and unwind a couple of things, reteach a couple of things and stuff like that as well. So yeah, schools have it hard too. They're managing more and more young people. Our well-being coordinators or our vice principals who are managing the funded students as well, they're working real hard to make it all work and to make it all seem seamless and to make sure that education support at the right time, at the right place, stuff like that as well.
Absolutely. I think that you're right, that should be acknowledged. Like the teachers do. I think the vast majority of teachers do their best. Like sometimes they don't know, but they're trying to learn and work with the parents, work with the specialists to do the best they can for the student. It's not always going to get it right, but I think the intention or the best intentions are there. And with more experience and I guess more learning, like that, it's only going to improve.
100%. I mean, I think teachers change lives.
Oh,
And,
absolutely. Like,
all the teachers have changed my Remy's life, like completely. Changed my life too.
Yeah,
Like changed
absolutely.
our lives to the absolute better as well. And you are right, they're all fantastic intention. And I say to other parents, appeal to the teacher. Like, there will be a lot going on in the school and there's this issue and this issue. Your best bet to advocate is actually with the teacher, because at the end of the
Mm.
day, the principal's not with your young person, with your child. And I'm like, appeal to the teacher. I talk about speaking highly of your young people's teacher. And speak about how great school is, how wonderful the experience is, and how much I love learning and stuff like that. So the more you speak about that in the household, and it's quite funny, I have to tell my 5-year-old, I'm like, we changed teachers this year. I know, to start this year. We are on Team Sarah this year. I know you love his old teacher, but you need to be like, you see Sarah, we all high five her. We tell her how wonderful she is, because she is wonderful. She's there every day, making a huge difference to my young person. Even just turning up and, having an inclusive classroom and, anything she does and helps support Remy, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it's so true. And I love how you call the team like teams. Teams, that's great. That's really cool. Okay, just one last question, Alicia, and also I guess it's two in one. Where can people get your book? I mean, when I say where people can get your book, you actually own the place where they
No,
get it
you're
from.
right. Amazon.
But it's where can they get your book? And also, what do you hope parents, teachers, and schools will take away from reading it?
My book is available through Amber Press, which is my publishing house, which is wonderful. And also Amazon, Booktopia, Barnes and Noble, in print and in ebook as well. So you can actually, flick it onto an e-reader and not have anyone read it as well. But one of the things also I have found is that, I have had, it was to some extent written for mothers and fathers as well, but I do find more mothers coming to me to buy it and stuff like that. Even my own husband was like, the chapter summaries. There is chapter summaries at the end of every chapter. If you just read the chapter summaries, actually, that's enough to kind of, be the cheerleader. And I guess the whole message of the book really is, if you want to mainstream your child, and if you think mainstream primary schooling is the best place for them, do it. It has not been a perfect experience, but it has been an absolute great experience. Nothing is going to be perfect. No school is ever going to be perfect, and I don't expect perfection. But we have had a life-changing experience, and I would say at least 3-4 times a week, my husband and I look at each other saying, we chose the right thing for our child at this time, and how wonderful, and we've made it work.
That's brilliant. Really, really appreciate your time and hearing that story, Alicia. And I think it's going to help a lot of people. I learned so much just through our conversation. And I've got a copy of the book. Can't wait to get into it. Arrived the other day, and we'll put the link to the book in the show notes as well. And really excited to have a look. And I really appreciate your time and everything that you've shared with us today.
Oh, it's been an absolute joy chatting to you, and thank you. And I do say to people, I wrote about it because not that I struggle to speak about it, but it was a good way for me to start processing. So thank you for the opportunity to chat about it as well. It's been an absolute joy, and great to
No,
chat to a
absolutely, it's a
teacher.
pleasure, and a lot of people are going to take a lot away from it. So it's fantastic to learn more about it and hear the story.
Unreal.